Connor pulls open his stall, switching places with Risa. Lev's door is open as well, but he's not coming out. Connor pushes Lev's door open all the way. He's not there. Lev? He looks to Risa, who just shakes her head. They check every stall, then check the one Lev was in again, as if he might reappear. But he doesn't. Lev is gone. And the baby begins wailing for all it's worth. 15. Lev. Lev is convinced his heart will explode in his chest. It will explode, and he will die right here in a school hallway. Slipping out of the bathroom once the bell rang had been nerve-wracking. He had unlocked his stall door and had kept his hand on the handle for 10 minutes waiting for the electronic buzz of the bell to mask the sound of its opening. Then he'd had to make it to the bathroom entrance without the others hearing his brand new sneakers squeaking on the floor. Why did they call them sneakers if it was so hard to sneak in them? He couldn't open that squealing door, then walk out by himself. It would be too conspicuous. So he waited until a bathroom-bound girl did it for him. Since the bell had just rung, he only had to wait a few seconds. She pulled open the door and he pushed his way past her, hoping she didn't say anything that would give him away. If she commented about a boy being in the girl's bathroom, Connor and Risa would know. "Next time, wear a dress," the girl said to him as he hurried away, and her friend laughed. Was that enough to alert Connor and Risa to his escape? He hadn't turned back to find out. He had just pressed forward. Now he's lost in the hallways of the huge high school, his heart threatening to detonate at any second. A wild mob of kids hurrying to their next class surround him, bump him, disorient him. Most of the kids here are bigger than Lev, imposing, intimidating. This is how he always imagined high school, a dangerous place full of mystery and violent kids. He had never worried about it because he had always known he would never have to go. In fact, he only had to worry about getting partway through 8th grade.
"Excuse me, can you tell me where the office is?" he asks one of the slower-moving students.
The kid looks down at him as if Lev were from Mars.
"How could you not know that?"
And he just walks away, shaking his head. Another, kinder kid points him in the right direction. Lev knows that things must be put back on track. This is the best place to do it, a school. If there are any secret plans to kill Connor and Risa, it can't happen here with so many kids around. And if he does this right, it won't happen at all. If he does it right, all three of them will be safely on their way to their unwinding, as it ought to be, as it was ordained to be. The thought of it still frightens him, but these days of not knowing what the next hour will bring, that is truly terrifying. Being torn from his purpose was the most unnerving thing that had ever happened to Lev, but now he understands why God let it happen. It's a lesson. It's to show Lev what happens to children who shirk their destiny. They become lost in every possible way. He enters the school's main office and stands at the counter, waiting to be noticed. But the secretary is too busy shuffling papers.
"Excuse me?"
Finally, she looks up.
"Can I help you, dear?"
He clears his throat.
"My name is Levi Calder, and I've been kidnapped by 2 runaway unwinds."
The woman, who really wasn't paying attention before, suddenly focuses her attention entirely on him.
"What did you say?" "I was kidnapped. We were hiding in a bathroom, but I got away. They're still there. They've got a baby, too."
The woman stands up and calls out, her voice shaky, like she's looking at a ghost. She calls in the principal, and the principal calls in a security guard. A minute later, Lev sits in the nurse's office, with the nurse doting on him like he's got a fever.
"Don't you worry," she says. "Whatever happened to you, it's all over now."
From here in the nurse's office, Lev has no way of knowing if they've captured Connor and Risa. He hopes that, if they have, they don't bring them here. The thought of having to face them makes him feel ashamed. Doing the right thing shouldn't make you feel ashamed.
"The police have been called. Everything's being taken care of," the nurse tells him. "You'll be going home soon."
"I'm not going home," he tells her. The nurse looks at him strangely, and he decides not to go into it.
Never mind. Can I call my parents?
She looks at him, incredulous.
You mean no one's done that for you?
She looks at the school phone in the corner, then fumbles for her cell phone in her pocket instead.
You call and let them know you're okay, and talk as long as you like.
She looks at him for a moment, then decides to give him his privacy, stepping out of the room.
I'll be right here if you need me.
Lev begins to dial, but stops himself. It's not his parents he wants to talk to. He erases the numbers and keys in a different one, hesitates for a moment, then hits the send button. It's picked up on the second ring.
Hello? Pastor Dan?
There's only a split second of dead air, and then recognition.
Dear God, Lev? Lev, is that you? Where are you? I don't know. Some school? Listen, you have to tell my parents to stop the police. I don't want them killed. Lev, slow down. Are you all right? They kidnapped me, but they didn't hurt me, so I don't want them hurt. Tell my father to call off the police. I don't know what you're talking about. We never told the police.
Lev is not expecting to hear this.
You never what? Your parents were going to. They were going to make a whole big deal about it, but I convinced them not to. I convinced them that your being kidnapped was somehow God's will.
Lev starts shaking his head like he can shake the thought away.
But why would you do that?
Now Pastor Dan starts to sound desperate.
Lev, listen to me. Listen to me carefully. No one else knows that you're gone. As far as anyone knows, you've been tithed, and people don't ask questions about children who are tithed. Do you understand what I'm telling you?
But I want to be tithed. I need to be. You have to call my parents and tell them. You have to get me to harvest camp.
Now Pastor Dan gets angry.
Don't make me do that! Please, don't make me do that!
It's as if he's fighting a battle, but somehow it's not Lev he's battling. This is so far from Lev's image of Pastor Dan, he can't believe it's the same person he's known all these years. It's like an imposter has stolen the pastor's voice, but none of his convictions.
Don't you see, Lev? You can save yourself. You can be anyone you want to be now.
And all at once, the truth comes to Lev. Pastor Dan wasn't telling him to run away from the kidnapper that day. He was telling Lev to run away from him, from his parents, from his tithing. After all his sermons and lectures, after all that talk year after year about Lev's holy duty, it's all been a sham. Lev was born to be tithed, and the man who convinced him this was a glorious and honorable fate doesn't believe it.
Lev? Lev, are you there?
He's there, but he doesn't want to be. He doesn't want to answer this man who led him to a cliff, only to turn away at the last minute. Now Lev's emotions spin like a wheel of fortune. One moment he's furious, the next, relieved. One instant he's filled with terror so extreme he can smell it like acid in his nostrils, and the next, there's a spike of joy. Like what he used to feel when he swung away and heard the crack of his bat against a ball. He is that ball now, soaring away. His life has been like a ballpark, hasn't it? All lines, structure, and rules never changing. But now he's been hit over the wall into unknown territory.
Lev, says Pastor Dan, you're scaring me. Talk to me.
Lev takes a slow, deep breath, then says,
Goodbye, sir.
Then he hangs up without another word. Lev sees police cars arrive outside. Connor and Risa will soon be caught, if they haven't been caught already. The nurse is no longer standing at the door. She's chiding the principal for how he's handling the situation.
Why didn't you call the poor boy's parents? Why haven't you put the school in lockdown?
Lev knows what he has to do. It's something wrong. It's something bad. But suddenly, he doesn't care. He slips out of the office right behind the nurses and the principal's backs and goes out into the hallway. It only takes a second to find what he's looking for. He reaches for the little box on the wall.
I am lost in every possible way.
Then, feeling the coldness of the steel against his fingertips, he pulls the fire alarm. 16. Teacher. The fire alarm goes off during the teacher's prep period, and she silently curses the powers that be for their awful timing. Perhaps, she thinks, if she can just stay in her empty classroom until the false alarm, and it's always a false alarm, is dealt with. But then, what kind of example would she be setting if students passing by looked in to see her sitting there? As she leaves the room, the hallways are already filling with students. Teachers try their best to keep them organized, but this is a high school. The organized lines of elementary school fire drills are long gone, having been replaced by the brazen hormonal zigzags of kids whose bodies are too big for their own good. Then she sees something strange, something troubling. There are two policemen by the front office. They actually seem intimidated by the mob of kids flowing past them and out the front doors of the school. But why policemen? Why not firemen? And how could they have gotten here so quickly? They couldn't have. They must have been called before the alarm went off. But why? The last time there were policemen in the school, someone called in a clapper threat. The school was evacuated, and no one knew why until after the fact. Turns out, there was no clapper. The school was never in danger of being blown up. It was just some kid pulling a practical joke. Still, clapper threats are always taken seriously, because you never know when the threat might be real.
"Please, no pushing," she says to a student who bumps her elbow. "I'm sure we'll all make it outside."
Good thing she didn't take her coffee.
"Sorry, Miss Steinberg."
As she passes one of the science labs, she notices the door ajar. Just to be thorough, she peeks in to make sure there are no stragglers or kids trying to avoid the mass exodus. The stone-top tables are bare and the chairs are all in place. No one had been in the lab this period. She reaches to pull the door closed, more out of habit than anything else, when she hears a sound that is wholly out of place in the room. A baby's cry. At first she thinks it might be coming from the student mother nursery, but the nursery is way down the hall. This cry definitely came from the lab. She hears the cry again, only this time it sounds oddly muffled and angrier. She knows that sound. Someone's trying to cover the baby's mouth to keep it from crying. These teen mothers always do that when they have their babies where they don't belong. They never seem to realize it only makes the baby cry louder.
"Party's over," she calls out. "Come on, you and your baby have to leave with everyone else."
But they don't come out. There's that muffled cry again, followed by some intense whispering that she can't quite make out. Annoyed, she steps into the lab and storms down the center aisle looking left and right, until she finds them crouched behind one of the lab tables. It's not just a girl and a baby, there's a boy there too. There's a look of desperation about them. The boy looks as if he might bolt, but the girl grabs him firmly with her free hand. It keeps him in place. The baby wails. The teacher might not know every name in school, but she's fairly certain she knows every face. And she certainly knows all the student mothers. This isn't one of them. And the boy's completely unfamiliar, too. The girl looks at her, eyes pleading. Too frightened to speak, she just shakes her head. It's the boy who speaks.
"If you turn us in, we'll die."
At the thought, the girl holds the baby closer to her. Its cries lessen but don't go away entirely. Clearly, these are the ones the police are looking for reasons she can only guess at.
"Please," says the boy. "Please what?" the teacher thinks. "Please break the law? Please put myself and the school at risk?"
But no, that's not it at all. What he's really saying is, "Please be a human being." With a life so full of rules and regiments, it's so easy to forget that's what they are. She knows, she sees, how often compassion takes a back seat to expediency. Then a voice from behind her. "Anna?" She turns to see another teacher looking in from the door. He's a bit disheveled, having fought the raging rapids of kids still funneling out of the school. He obviously hears the baby's cries. How could he not? "Is everything all right?" he asks.
"Yeah,"
says Hannah, with more calm in her voice than she actually feels.
"I'm taking care of it."
The other teacher nods and leaves,
probably glad not to share the burden of whatever this crying baby situation is. Hannah now knows what the situation is, however, or at least she suspects. Kids only have this kind of desperation in their eyes when they're going to be unwound. She holds out her hand to the frightened kids.
Come with me.
The kids are hesitant, so she says,
If they're looking for you, they'll find you once the building is empty. You can't expect to hide here. If you want to get out, you have to leave with everyone else. Come on, I'll help you.
Finally, they rise from behind the lab table, and she breathes a sigh of relief. She can tell they still don't trust her, but then, why should they? Unwinds exist in the constant shadow of betrayal. Well, they don't need to trust her now, they just need to go with her. In this case, necessity is the mother of compliance, and that's just fine.
Don't tell me your names, she says to them. Don't tell me anything, so if they question me afterward, I won't be lying when I say I don't know.
There are still crowds of kids pushing past in the hall, heading toward the nearest exit. She steps out of the room, making sure the two kids and their baby are right behind her. She will help them. Whoever they are, she will do her best to get them to safety. What kind of example would she be setting if she didn't?
17. Risa.
Police down the hall. Police at the exits. Risa knows this is Lev's doing. He didn't just run away, he turned them in. This teacher says she's helping them, but what if she's not? What if she's just leading them to the police?
Don't think about that now. Keep your eyes on the baby.
Policemen know panic when they see it. But if her eyes are turned to the baby, her panic might be read as concern for the baby's tears.
If I ever see Lev again, says Connor, I'll tear him to pieces.
Shh, says the teacher, leading them along with the crowd to the exit. Risa can't blame Connor for his anger. She blames herself for not seeing through Lev's sham. How could she have been so naive to think he was truly on their side?
We should have let the little creep be unwound, grumbles Connor.
Shut up, says Risa. Let's just get out of this. As they near the door, another policeman comes into view standing just outside.
Give me the baby,
the teacher orders, and Risa does as she's told. She doesn't yet realize why the woman asked for the baby, but it doesn't matter. It's wonderful to have someone leading the way who seems to know what they're doing. Perhaps this woman isn't the enemy after all. Perhaps she truly will get them through this.
Let me go ahead, the teacher says. The two of you separate and just walk out with the rest of the kids.
Without the baby to look at, Risa knows she can't hide the panic in her eyes. But suddenly she realizes that it might not matter. And now she understands why the woman took the baby. Yes, Lev turned them in. But if they're lucky, these local police may only have a description of them to go by. A scruffy-haired boy and a dark-haired girl with a baby. Take away the baby, and that could be half the kids in this school. The teacher, Hannah, passes the policeman a few yards ahead of them, and he gives her only a momentary glance. But then he looks toward Risa, and his eyes lock on her. Risa knows she's just given herself away. Should she turn and race back into the school? Where's Connor now? Is he behind her or in front of her? She has no idea. She's completely alone. And then salvation arrives in a most unlikely form.
Hi, Dee Dee.
It's Alexis, the talkative girl from the school bus. She comes up beside her with Chase gnawing at her shoulder.
People pull the alarms all the time, she says. Well, at least I got out of math.
Suddenly, the policeman's eyes shift to Alexis.
Stop right there, miss.
Alexis looks stunned.
Who, me?
Step aside. We'd like to ask you a few questions.
Risa walks right on past, holding her breath for fear that her gasp of relief might draw the officer's attention again. Risa no longer fits the profile of what they're looking for, but Alexis does. Risa doesn't look back. She just continues down the steps to the street. In a few moments, Connor catches up with her.
I saw what happened back there. Your friend may have just saved your life. I'll have to thank her later.
Up ahead, Hannah reaches into her pocket with her free hand, pulls out her car keys, then turns left toward the faculty parking lot.
It's all going to be okay, Risa thinks, She's going to get us out of here.
Risa might just start believing in miracles and angels. And then she hears a familiar voice behind her.
Wait! Stop!
She turns to see Lev. He spotted them. And although he's far away, he's quickly working his way through the crowd toward them.
Risa! Connor! Wait!
It wasn't enough to just turn them in. Now he's leading the cops